We want to examine this idea of being spiritual but not religious. It seems to be from a survey point of view, kind of a new category for people to fill themselves into, but a quite popular one. If you look across the entire nation of America, 10%, one out of 10 people will identify themselves and say, I have a spiritual yearning in my heart, I'm a spiritual person, but I'm not connected to any religion. I kind of eschew religion, I don't want to be related to it, don't want to be involved in that whatsoever. A 1 out of 10 doesn't seem all that big, but it is actually larger than the entirety of Lutherans, the entirety of Episcopals, the entirety of Jews, the entirety of Muslims. So it's a pretty large category. When you break that down, though, over demographic age levels, you find that it's even more extreme in the younger levels. So 40% of those between 18 and 35 will say, I am a spiritual person, but I do not connect to any religion whatsoever. Just as a reference point for you in that same age range, if you put all of the Protestants together, which is really every Christian in this grouping apart from those that identify as Catholics, so all the Christians in the U.S. apart from Catholics in the same age range, that's 30%. So a huge portion, especially of that younger generation, is connecting to this idea that I am a spiritual person, I can be a spiritual person, but not be connected to religion at all. Paul actually writes about that in the passage that we just read, and so we want to kind of examine what that means and where it goes. I think that probably there's some degree of hearing that before. It's maybe not a new term that you haven't heard of. And maybe there's even some kind of connection in your own heart. There's something that sounds nice about saying I'm not a part of an institution. We in America try as hard as we can not be connected to institutions. That's kind of a negative thing in our culture. So this gives us a space from that. To say that we're spiritual, not religious, is a little bit more authentic feeling, a little bit more honest feeling. We're kind of used to the hypocritical things that come out of institutions and religion, and so this seems a little bit more fresh for us. So we're going to look at five different ways that spiritual and religious are different, kind of examine our way through those things. So you have all that space. You can take as many notes as you want. You can write whatever matches your heart. If this is important, write it down. If not, you can move on to the next ones. So the first distinctive point is that being spiritual is something that is private, whereas being religious is something that's public. So the private nature means that I can do it in my own home, I can do it in my own life, I can do it wherever I happen to be at any moment. It doesn't impact any other person around me. I don't have to tell anyone else about my spirituality. I don't have to express it anywhere else. It doesn't show up in my actions in any kind of public way. Whereas if you are connected to a religion, then by nature it is public. Right, I mean, you'll leave your house at a certain time, maybe on a certain day of the week, and you're going to go somewhere else to be, right? You're going to say, I identify maybe as a member of this religion. I will hold up my hand if anyone asks, are you a Christian? Then I'm like, yes, I will identify as part of that publicly. It's not merely something that I hold in my heart, that I have inside of me. It's something that is also kind of public and broader than that, right? So a distinction between spiritual and religious. Spiritual also really has nothing that is asked of me. There's no commitment called out of me, no sacrifice. There's really no cost to being a spiritual person. Being a religious person has a significant cost, right? We have a Jesus who said, if you want to follow me, take up your cross and deny yourself. The Bible is filled with a lot of challenges from God that say, hey, if you're going to follow me, I want you to be generous. I want you to forgive. I want you to love others. I want you to invest your heart in them. I want you to tithe. I want you to... There's a whole lot of things God asks of you. The reality is if you follow Jesus in a religious sense, then there is a cost for you. If you're simply a spiritual person, there isn't a cost. What's fascinating is that when they do surveys and they look at all the people that say, I am spiritual, yes, I identify as spiritual, but I'm not a religious person at all. When they break that down and begin to say, what habits fill your life? Do you read spiritual texts of any kind? Do you pray? What we find is that they almost rarely do any of those things. Even when they went so far as to ask, do you spend, because the inevitable result is that when you say you're spiritual, you're like, I find God in nature. I find God in sunsets, I find God in the beach, I find, like, that's the common response. So they actually went and asked and said, do you then spend more time looking at sunsets? Do you find more time where you go out into nature to identify and build this spiritual nature? Statistically, they don't. They do not pause for sunsets any more than the average American. So there's really this reality that says, I can say this thing in my head, but as far as practical things that I do, there's absolutely no cost. There's not a change in behavior that comes out of that. So I can identify and say I'm a spiritual person, but it doesn't mean I talk to God of any sort more than anything. It doesn't mean I read or try to dig into that anymore. It doesn't mean I pause for sunsets any more than anyone else. Nothing necessarily is asked. Whereas if you're part of a religion, any religion, there's going to be a sacrifice that's required for that. There's going to be rules, laws, things you follow along with. Being spiritual is an individual kind of thing, whereas being in a religion is a community kind of thing. All right, you can't follow a religion all on your own. A religion invites you into a community of other followers of that religion and says we express and do things together in the midst of that. Spirituality says this is one area of my life that I'm isolated in and I'm not connected to others. It's honestly a little bit strange at that level. In the past, spirituality and religion were never differentiated. They were understood to be the same thing. Now we've got this difference about those things. But if you think about it, how many of you have a favorite sports team? Anyone? Okay. Is that an individual experience for you that you never share with anyone else around you? No, that would be a little strange, right? Any of you like to eat? Is that an individual experience for you? Maybe if you live on your own, it is at times, but usually we hunger to eat with other people. And we hunger to eat what they eat, right? If you're eating at a family meal, it's considered somewhat rude to say, I don't like your food, I'll bring my own. Right? So there's that differentiation, though, that says that in this area where we deal with God and the things of the Spirit, I want to be fully an individual. And I don't want to be a part of another community. I don't want to be tied into them. I don't want to have to be a part of what they hope for or want or eat or all those other kinds of things. So it's a very individual approach to a community kind of thing. Now, a meme is an image that shows up on the internet. I guess it can show up other places, Twitter and things like that. It's used to kind of draw attention to something in a short, pithy way, pull out an image. Willy Wonka shows up on a lot of these memes, so you can see this one here. I think because he's got kind of this sarcastic feel about him. So they show the picture and then you get the sense that there's a sarcasm following along. So he says, oh, so you're spiritual but not religious. Does that mean you cherry pick the parts of religion that you only like? Now, the video that I showed at the beginning actually goes on for a few more minutes and does a fairly insightful job of kind of really examining the distinction between spiritual and religious. But I will tell you that it's not produced by Christians, and where I cut it off is right before the language gets a little bit unchristian as it follows along. But the next thing that goes along is the pastor, reverend, leader, whatever it is that's up at the front, makes the same point that Willy Wonka is making here. He says that we choose to reject one book, and he holds up a Bible, and the crazy ideas that come from that so that we can embrace the crazy ideas from a lot of other books. And then the congregation looks and they all hold up different religious texts of all these different kinds of things. The idea is that as you examine that difference between spiritual and religious, being spiritual means that only my choices matter. And my opinion about what's true about God or those kinds of things is what really defines reality. I don't need to be formed or shaped by anyone outside of me, right? The ideas of people that are hundreds of years old don't have any impact on my life. Why should I listen to what they have to say about who God is or anything else like that? I have my own mind, my own understanding, my own appreciation of things, and that's all that I need. It is a very empowering idea. And in our culture, we value empowerment. We teach it to our kids from the very beginning, right? You should think for yourself. You should own your own things. You have brilliant ideas inside of your head, all of those kinds of things. So this idea here is that being spiritual means that I don't have to listen to anyone else. And I alone can be the judge of what is spiritually true or spiritually untrue, and whatever spiritually fits me personally. To be a part of religion is to say that I am not adequate on my own. And I will allow something outside of me to shape me. That is the nature of religion. Obviously, it feels much better to be on the side that says only my choices matter and my preferences are the highest thing that I can have. It's humbling to be on the other side. It's never easy to be where Jesus says to deny yourself and let me decide your life. Let me decide the path that's in front of you. But that is what religion says. It says someone outside of me begins to shape and form who I am. Then there is this final out of the five options that we have, or five differences that we have. This idea of keeping our options open versus being in a commitment. Right? There's a great desire for all of us not to be locked into something until we have to. Right? If you're going to make a big decision, like you're buying a house or you're buying a car, you'd like to know, like, can I have some time to think it through? Can I get some other opinions in there? Can I really make sure this is the best house, the best car for me? In most decisions in life, we'd like to really kind of process and think it through, right? I'm going to check it out online and see if there's a better deal somewhere. I'll look at the repair reports and see how those things go, right? We're really cautious about thinking, making commitments. We want to keep our options open as long as we possibly can, right? Maybe even not deciding until right when the waitress comes to the table. What am I going to get to eat? I don't know. I want to keep the options open. Who knows what I'm going to be led to in the last moment of things. In the younger generation, we find this inability to commit even stronger. It goes beyond what is maybe a healthy balance to a place of kind of extremes. And so studies done, again, in millennials, which is where that first, or the second statistic was, kind of 35 and below fits into that category. The levels of stress and anxiety for that group in our culture, or that generation, are higher than for anyone else. So if you have kids in that range or grandkids in that range or you're in that range, this is what we have. And it's not because life is so much harder. So much more has been given to that, honestly. I mean, if you're 70 or 80, you've had a lot more challenges in your life than those younger generations have. Life has been safe and fairly easy. So it's not a stress that comes out of that, like I can't feed myself, I can't make it in life. It's a stress that as studies examine it comes because there are so many options. And in addition to the multiplicity of options, there is this teaching that comes out of our culture that says that you should be uncomfortable if you're not completely overjoyed with wherever you are in a given moment. If your job right now isn't really fulfilling for you, then you're not in the right job. If your college major isn't really fulfilling, if your marriage isn't really fulfilling, then you need to look elsewhere because life should be really fulfilling all the time. And so we find this generation that says it's hard for me to make any decisions or commit because I haven't been really fulfilled. And so the number of college majors goes on, the number of different jobs goes on, and this inability to say I can deal with the fact that sometimes my job won't satisfy me. Sometimes my marriage won't be the most exciting thing I've ever experienced, but I'm still going to move on through those things. So we have this younger generation that has in their phone, right, thousands of dating options available for them, like in ways that never were available in generations before. You flip through Tinder or Match.com, and at any given moment, you're like, oh, it may not be this one, but there's 200 other people I can find right around me. And so there's this inability to settle down and commit to any one thing. And that matches this heart out of commitment. So just hold on to that image for a second and let me read to you verse 2 out of 2 Corinthians. Paul writes, I am jealous for you, the Corinthians, with a godly jealousy. I promise you to one husband, to Christ. But I'm afraid that you're being distracted or pulled somewhere else. So now you can put the image back up there. As you look at that image, it is maybe at first humorous, but then as you have any kind of humanity about you, it probably is disturbing. Right? Are any of those three individuals there ones that you say, that's a great role model for me? Do you want to be any of those three people in that picture? Right? Do you want to be the guy who says, I can't commit? I want to keep my options open. Do you want to be the girl who thought there was a commitment, but in reality there wasn't? Or do you want to be the other external option? No, none of those things are. Because when we think about it just as spirituality, not religious, we're like, oh, I'm keeping my options open. I'm just being open to all the things that are out there in the world. That's fine until it gets to a relationship level. And if it was merely a matter of having different theologies or different philosophies about the world, that might be fine. But what we find in our faith is that this is boiled down into a relationship with Jesus. Which is why Paul says being spiritual is destructive if you don't have the religion that goes along with it. If you don't have a commitment, then you're missing that whole relational aspect of things. So that image from Paul's perspective is the most profound and meaningful one for you to grab as you look at the difference between being spiritual and being religious. As Paul goes on in the verse afterward, he kind of identifies for us that as much as people write a lot of things and say, oh, this is a new idea, this is a whole lot of new philosophy out there, it's not really new. In verse 4, he shows us that being spiritual but not religious is not a fresh idea. It's not cutting edge, it's not hip, it's as old as the Bible is, right? He says, there's one Jesus is as good as another. Or that's the argument you make. One spirit is as good as another. One gospel is as good as another, right? I have this one here, but I found this one there. That's just fine, right? One religion is as good as another. One spirituality is as good as another. One way of following after God or pursuing my heart. One morality is as good as another. You can't tell me your morality is better than my morality, right? Six of this, half dozen of another, totally fine. It's not a new idea. Paul writes about it back here, but he calls us back in the end to say that the greatest benefit, beyond all those other things, is that our religion is one that is lived in a relationship with Jesus. So maybe those other things might apply to a lot of other religions out there, but here is where we get differentiated and we see that a Christian faith, a Christian religion, is unique. Because it's not just philosophy, it's not just ideas, it is a relationship. And you understand, because we understand the nature of a commitment in a marriage, the beauty and the richness of that, but the commitment nature too, and how wrong it is to step apart from that or step outside of that. So here is that primary image Paul gives and says, this is what it means to have the Christian religion. Right, to be a part of that. There's been a while that the church has kind of said another phrase too that says, I don't have a religion, I have a relationship. What Paul is saying is I have both. And we don't need to be pressed by culture to get rid of something else that is inherently good. We have a religion that offers us a structure, an organization, a greater relationship than just where we are. So there's a little bit of a essay that I want to read for you. It's written by Lillian Daniels, who is a pastor of a church in Iowa. She posted it online a while ago about this whole kind of issue. She got a little bit of flack back because it's actually a little bit sarcastic. So if that's harsh on you, just kind of realize she's coming from that perspective. She said, that's my way of doing my sense of humor. That's how it comes out. I'm sorry if it offends you. So here is what she had to say. She said, being privately religious or spiritual but not religious just doesn't interest me. There's nothing challenging about having deep thoughts all by myself. What is interesting is doing this work in a community where other people might call you on stuff or, heaven forbid, actually disagree with you. Where life with God gets rich and provocative is when you dig deeply into a tradition that you didn't invent all by yourself. Thank you for sharing, spiritual but not religious sunset person. Load of sarcasm in that statement. You are now comfortably in the norm for self-centered American culture. You're right smack in the bland majority of people who find ancient religions dull, but find themselves uniquely fascinating. right? Ancient religions, absolutely dull. Whatever people believe somewhere else, whatever you have in your heart, absolutely dull. But me, I am amazingly fascinating. My own thoughts, my own ideas, that's worth pursuing, right? She says, can I switch seats now and sit next to someone who's been shaped by a community of people instead of their own thoughts? Can I spend my time talking to someone brave enough to encounter God in a real human community? And she writes this about a conversation she had on an airplane. So she says, when this flight gets choppy, that's who I really want by my side. Someone holding a hand, saying a prayer, and simply putting up with me, which is what we do in church. So I want to, I mean, it's maybe a mental kind of shift for us, just to encourage you that the idea of having a religion is a really healthy thing. The idea of having a commitment and saying, I'm not keeping all my spiritual options open, is a good place to be. And I will tell you this morning that I have a religion. I have made a commitment to Jesus Christ. I allow him the freedom to shape and to mold me however he desires. I walk that religion in the midst of a community of people who also have the freedom to correct me and the freedom to come alongside of me. And I'm not walking apart from that. It's not about my agenda. It's not about what's convenient for me. Does that fit my schedule? Does that work for me? It's about what works for Jesus and what works for the wholeness of who we are. And I'm not ashamed to say that my spirituality is lived out in a relationship with Jesus that is founded in this religion that I have. And I have a commitment to that. I want to invite you to pray with me. Father, I pray for those of us that have found our way here today, that wherever we are on a spectrum of figuring you out, that you would lead us in your time and your space to a commitment. Where we're not holding hands with multiple girls, but where we can say, you are truly the beautiful Savior. And there's not another Savior that I need. There's not another one I need to look out for. And I give myself fully to you. God, I recognize that in our culture, this message is not meant to be judgmental. It's not meant to be made fun. There is a lot of confusion. There's a lot of uncertainty. It's hard to make that choice. And so, God, as we look beyond at others, we want to come with a great sensitivity. With a great awareness that says that only you can lead us to a place of commitment. But we do pray that over our culture, God, from the youngest to the oldest, that they would be able to find their way through the self-centeredness of just kind of stepping back, of not being engaged, to the beauty of a rootedness in people that have come before and people that will come after, and a God that offers a relationship in the midst of that. God, I pray that America would find a Christian religion and the Jesus that lies at the heart of it. We pray that in your name. Amen.